Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, April 1st, 2022. Coming up this hour.
Peace talks are set to resume between Russia and Ukraine.
The second quarter kicks off after a historically bad one for stocks and bonds.
Talks of a recession threaten confidence for investors.
And Wall Street looks to the March jobs report for the latest reading on the economy.
A judge orders New York's Democrat-controlled legislature to redraw the state's congressional districts. Plus, New Jersey Governor Murphy has COVID. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Overtime in Brooklyn. The Bucks beat the Nets. And yet another injury concern for Mets ace Jacob DeGrom.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 106.1 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And U.S. stock index futures on the rise this morning. We're coming up to 6:01 on Wall Street. I mean, check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 23 points. Dow futures up 178. And NASDAQ futures up 81. 10-year Treasury down 18/32nds. Yield 2.40%. And the yield on the two-year, 2.38%. NYMEX crude oil is little change at $100.31 a barrel. Nathan.
Karen, we'll have more on the markets in a minute. But first, we start in Ukraine. Peace talks with Russia are set to resume today. Those negotiations will be by video. Meantime, Russia says two Ukrainian military helicopters made a strike across the border and hit a Russian oil tank facility. Amy Morris has the latest from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
Kyiv has not confirmed the strike in Russia, but did say its forces retook several villages in the Kherson region to the south. This as President Biden says Vladimir Putin may have detained some of his own advisors.
He seems to be self-isolated. And there's some indication that he has fired or put under house arrest some of his advisors.
Meanwhile, the United Nations says relief convoys are unable so far to reach Mariupol, but Russia says it will open a humanitarian corridor there today. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Amy, thank you. China also in focus this morning. European leaders are warning Beijing about involvement in the war. And we go live to London and get the latest with Bloomberg's Ewan Potts. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. The European Commission's president says China has a special responsibility to demand that Russia respects international law and to defend Ukraine's sovereignty. That's the message that Ursula von der Leyen will deliver to Beijing today at a virtual summit expected to be dominated by Russia's war. Europeans are expected to tell China that any help to Moscow to avoid sanctions or to supply weapons will result in severe consequences. Live in London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Ewan, thanks. Turning back to markets now, oil's heading for its biggest weekly loss in almost 2 years after falling 7% yesterday. It's little change now with NYMEX crude at $100.33 and Brent at $104.84. That's after the White House ordered an unprecedented release of strategic reserves. Democratic Michigan Congressman Dan Kildee says it's a good first step.
I don't think by itself it solves the problem, but it's a step. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see us do a couple other things. But this is a step in the right direction. People need relief at the pump, and this will make a difference in terms of the prices they're seeing for everything.
Congressman Dan Kildee also supports a temporary lift on the federal and state gas tax. He spoke with our Washington correspondent Joe Matthew on Bloomberg Sound On. Catch the program weekdays at 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio.
All right, Nathan, war, inflation, and the lingering impact of the pandemic made the first quarter a historically rough one for investors. More than $3 trillion were erased from bond and equity values in the period. Megan Hornman, chief investment officer at Verdence Capital Advisors, sees the current situation as a buying opportunity.
We are also looking at some of the areas that are getting beaten down the most. You know, some of the growth areas that got hit really bad in January and February, we did put some money to work there, thinking that over the long run that they had been unfairly pushed lower because of what's going on with interest rates as well as the war with Russia and Ukraine.
Megan Hornman with Verdence Capital Advisors says earnings season will be key for future market action.
Well, questions are swirling about what earnings will look like, Karen, and also whether recession's coming. Citigroup Global Chief Economist Nathan Sheets says the odds of that are significant.
Globally, it's around a third. The geopolitical situation, the energy situation is very severe. I think in the United States, we are insulated a notch. When I think about kind of the global situation, coupled with the Federal Reserve potentially hiking very rapidly, maybe one in four over the next 18 months. It is significant.
Citigroup Global Chief Economist Nathan Sheets made the comments on Bloomberg's Balance of Power. Catch that program weekdays at noon Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and Television.
Well, Nathan, we get more clues about the economy later this morning. With the release of the March jobs report, the median forecast calls for 490,000 new jobs and an employment rate of 3.7%. We get more from Bloomberg's Michael McKee.
Analysts expect March was another strong month of job growth, although barring a major surprise, the numbers may not make a whole lot of difference to the Fed. Policymakers have all but said they're in line to raise the nation's benchmark lending rate by half a percentage point on May 4th. Nevertheless, they will feel better if they see a lot of Americans going back into the labor force. That would ease pressure on wages and, therefore, on inflation. That's particularly true for manufacturing. Companies have struggled to find factory workers, leading some to turn away business. Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Mike, thanks. Let's turn to corporate news now with a focus on the world's largest retail site. The push to unionize at Amazon is growing. Let's get the latest live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. The upstart Amazon labor union in Staten Island is closer to forming. Workers who want to organize are leading by more than 350 votes out of about 2,600 tallied. That count will continue today. Meantime, Amazon workers in Alabama voted to reject a union in a tight race yesterday, but the National Labor Relations Board says about a quarter of the votes are challenged and will need to be reviewed. Those could potentially change the outcome. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. And in early trading this morning, we're seeing shares of GameStop up about 15%. The video game retailer plans to ask shareholders for approval of a stock split in the form of a dividend, and that mirrors recent moves from Amazon, Alphabet, and Tesla.
And right now, futures are higher, with S&P futures up 22 points, Dow futures up 175, NASDAQ futures up 81 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 18/32, the yield 2.40%, yield on the 2-year 2.39%. NYMEX crude up 0.2% or 20 cents at $100.48 a barrel, and COMEX gold is down to $1,937.80 an ounce. Local headlines and a check of sports up next. This is Bloomberg. It's now 6:07 on Wall Street. Clouds 55 degrees in Central Park. We've got an accident in Staten Island. It's at the lower level of the Verrazano Bridge. Details coming up in traffic first. Michael Barr with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. The judge has ordered New York's Democrat-controlled legislature to redraw the state's congressional and legislative districts after finding they were unconstitutional. Judge Patrick McAllister said in the ruling that maps redrawing the state's congressional districts were gerrymandered to benefit Democrats. Judge McAllister gave lawmakers until April 11th to try again, and if their new maps fail to pass muster in the courts, the judge said he would order the state to pay for a court-approved expert to redraw the maps. The NYPD says a 12-year-old boy was killed by gunfires. He was eating in a parked car in Brooklyn with two family members, one of whom was shot and wounded. Assistant Chief Michael Kemper said the boy was shot multiple times and pronounced dead at the scene.
A preliminary investigation reveals that the three pulled over in the car to eat some food when shots were fired that penetrated their vehicle.
Kemper said a 20-year-old woman in the driver's seat was taken to the hospital and is expected to recover. An 8-year-old girl in the back seat was unhurt. New York City Mayor Eric Adams, also at the news conference, stressed the importance of getting guns off the streets.
The question I continue to ask, what about the innocent people? What about people that sit in their cars and they're shot and killed? We hear so much about those who are fighting, but when are we going to start fighting for the innocent people of this city?
Mayor Adams says we need everyone to help us end this senseless violence. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy has tested positive for COVID-19 and will isolate for 5 days. A spokesperson says Murphy is asymptomatic and feeling well, but will cancel all events. Most New Yorkers who worked from home during the pandemic plan to cut their time in the office by nearly half and spend less money in the city annually. According to Stanford economics professor Nicholas Bloom, the average New York City office worker would slash annual spending in the city by more than $6,700. That's down from an estimated $12,500 before the pandemic. At a news conference at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, Bloom said the remote work push could cost New York between 5 and 10% of its city center population. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. Almost 6:10 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update with John Stashower.
Nathan, originally the plan was for Jacob DeGrom to spend the last day of March on the mound, Citi Field, pitching opening day for the Mets. Of course, opening day pushed back a week after the lockout, so DeGrom instead was doing some long tossing in Port St. Lucie, and he felt some tightness in his shoulder, and every Mets fan had the same thought. Here we go again. When DeGrom pitches, he's the best there is, but so often he doesn't pitch. Missed the second half of last season with elbow injuries, likely headed now for an MRI. Overtime in Brooklyn, Milwaukee topped the Nets 120-119. Giannis Antetokounmpo scored 44. Kevin Durant had 26 points. Kyrie Irving, 25. Islanders beat Columbus 5-2. Devils lost in Boston 8-1. The last NIT game at the Garden, at least for a while. They are now going to move the tournament around to other cities. Xavier topped Texas A&M in a game with 17 lead changes. 73-72. Women's Final Four starts tonight in Minneapolis, and then the men's start tomorrow in New Orleans. 4 days after coaching St. Peter's in the NCAA Elite Eight, Shaheen Holloway introduced as the new coach at Seton Hall.
No shortcuts, no nothing. Hope you guys are ready to work. And I know I watch this team go out. I know what this team can do. So after this meeting, after this press conference, the first thing is going to be meeting with you guys to understand what it's going to take to be played for me. Understand the tradition of Seton Hall University.
He's a Seton Hall alum. His salary at Seton Hall will be about $2.5 million, about 10 times what he was making at St. Peter's. All of Holloway's St. Peter's players attended the presser in South Orange, gave their former coach a standing ovation. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
John, thanks. S&P futures now up 23 points. Dow futures up 178. NASDAQ futures up 87. 10-year Treasury yield 2.40%. Yield on the 2-year close to 2.39. That's a spread of 1 basis point. And NYMEX crude is now up 0.3% at $100.56 a barrel. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by the Jewish Communal Fund. JCF's donor-advised fund is the smart choice to manage your philanthropy, especially in times of crisis. Make your giving impactful. Visit jcfny.org.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks and futures are rising as investors evaluate the economic outlook amid tightening monetary policy and Russia's war in Ukraine. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are up 23 points. Dow futures up 173 and NASDAQ futures up 84. The DAX in Germany is up 0.5%. 10-year Treasury down 17 30 seconds, yield 2.4%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.38%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.2% or 18 cents. At $100.46 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.9% or $17.10 at $19.36.80 an ounce. The euro 1.1053 against the dollar. British pound 1.3136. The yen at 122.39. And checking Bitcoin, it's down 1.5% at $45,075. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. Russia claims Ukrainian forces have attacked a fuel depot across the border inside Russia. If it's confirmed, it would be the first Ukrainian airstrike on Russian soil since the war started. Meanwhile, Ukrainian authorities say Russian troops have left the heavily contaminated Chernobyl nuclear site. It comes as Russia confirms talks will resume today with Ukraine via video link. The European Union will seek China's reassurances that it will not assist Russia in circumventing economic sanctions leveled over the invasion of Ukraine at an annual summit today. In the NBA, the Nets lost. In the NHL, the Bruins put a pitchfork in the Devils, 8-1. The Islanders won. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. It's 6:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we're joined once again this morning by Mark Champion, Senior Reporter for International Affairs for Bloomberg News, as we monitor developments in the war in Ukraine. And it does seem as though, Mark, we are seeing some pretty significant developments if this report pans out from Russia that Ukraine actually crossed its border and went on the offensive against an oil tank facility in Russian territory. Is this a sign the tables are turning?
Well, not necessarily that, but it is a sign that the Ukrainians are doubling down, really, on a tactic that's been very successful for them so far, which is to attack Russian logistics behind the lines. This time it's different. Instead of going for fuel tankers along the roads, which they've hit a lot, they've hit a fuel depot in Belgorod, which is just on the other side of the border, a key supply route into the eastern Donbass territories, which is where Russia says it's now going to concentrate its offensives. So it's kind of drawing down above Kiev and in the north and pushing in resources into the east. So it's a very smart and logical move for the Ukrainians to make, really.
And we're also hearing reports as well that Russian forces are pulling away near the Chernobyl facility, and Ukraine is saying it's taking more territory in some villages as well. Can you catch us up on that?
Yes, we don't yet have a lot of confirmed data, but it does look like the Russians are pulling back towards Belarus, and the Ukrainians are sort of harassing them as they go. They say that some 40 villages around the country have been taken, but we don't, you know, that's very difficult to confirm. And as always in a war, each side tends to exaggerate their successes and report on their losses. But nevertheless, it does seem like there's some movement.
Now, while we continue to try to confirm these reports from the ground, how does this set us up for the resumption of talks that now both sides say is going to happen remotely today?
Yes, they're going to have another round, according to the Russians, of remote talks today. They haven't gone very far so far. They have come to agreement on some of the, agreement in principle on some of the more diplomatic areas. But territory is the real problem, which remains unaddressed. As we can see, we're in a phase of facts being made on the ground. As often in these situations, the things continue simultaneously with the each side trying to make the facts on the ground that they can use as leverage in talks.
Are we still facing, or at least is Ukraine still facing, that trust gap with Russia, needing a ceasefire to be agreed to before they can get to some of those more thorny issues?
Well, a ceasefire is very likely to be the first stage. The difficulty is for Russia to, you know, really have a ceasefire and start pulling troops out. That loses them leverage on the ground. They obviously have the dominant force. It should be a simple issue, but it's actually extremely difficult to get to agreement as you kind of stage it in such a way as neither side thinks they're losing out.
And you mentioned that the biggest issue for both sides is the issue of territory. But what about the neutral status idea that Ukraine is at least sounding open to the idea of some sort of neutral status? Is that potentially somewhere that both sides can sort of come to the middle on?
That should be relatively easy to do. Strangely, because it was, you know, such a big issue leading into the war. But there was always some room for maneuver there. At various times, Ukraine has had neutrality written into its law. It was always possible, but it's, you know, there's a lot of devil in the detail there as to what that means, what kind, you know, Russia also wants to go with that. It wants demilitarization. And the flip side to that is that the Ukrainians are saying, well, if you want us to reduce, make commitments about what kind of weaponry we'll have, then we need security guarantees from other countries. And then immediately you start getting into what is neutrality in that case, if you have security guarantees from other countries.
All right. We'll, of course, continue monitoring the talks as they get underway and any readouts that come out from either side. Mark Champion, senior reporter for international affairs for Bloomberg News, as always, thanks for getting us the latest on what's happening in the war in Ukraine. Looking ahead to the market open, futures are moving higher on this first day of the second quarter and ahead of the March jobs report. S&P futures up 22 points. Dow futures up 166. NASDAQ futures are higher by 84 points. Looking at a flattening yield curve with the 10-year Treasury down 16 32nds, a yield of 2.39%, the yield on the 2-year 2.37. Much more to come, including a look ahead to March jobs and Amazon priming for a union drive. Five things you need to know to start your day on Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Anshin Accountants and Advisors. Challenging times call for proactive advisors who help minimize taxes, increase cash flow, and create opportunities for the future of your business. Visit Anshin.com.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
Six 30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 3 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Time for the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers charges margin loan rates from 0.83% to 1.83%, rates subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare. Up first, the tables may be turning in the war in Ukraine. Russia says two Ukrainian helicopters hit a Russian oil tank facility, and Ukraine said it's retaken territory in the Kherson and Chernihiv regions. President Biden said the war is not going well for Vladimir Putin.
I'm not saying this with a certainty. He seems to be self-isolated, and there's some indication that he has fired or put under house arrest some of his advisors.
Talks between Ukraine and Russia are set to resume by video today.
In the meantime, Karen, the White House decision to release U.S. strategic oil reserves has crude on track for its biggest weekly loss in almost 2 years. It dropped 7% yesterday. Right now, West Texas Intermediate's at $100.07 a barrel.
It's the beginning of the second quarter, Nathan. More than $3 trillion were erased from bond and equity values in the first quarter. The S&P 500 dropped 4.9% this morning, and S&P futures are up 22 points.
And for markets today, of course, it's all about March jobs. Economists surveyed by Bloomberg forecast a gain of almost 500,000. Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice has more.
America's economy has added about 1.2 million jobs since the start of the year. Job openings totaled 11.3 million in February, just shy of a record. Bloomberg Economics says the labor market has room to run, with payrolls still below February 2020's peak, just before the pandemic landed in the U.S. Look at weekly jobless claims. They dropped to a half-century low in mid-March. They had been running in the millions in the early stages of the pandemic. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thank you. Let's turn to corporate news now with a focus on the world's largest retail site. The push to unionize at Amazon is growing. Bloomberg's Renita Young joins us live with the latest. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Karen. The upstart Amazon labor union in Staten Island is closer to forming. Workers who want to organize are leading by more than 350 votes out of about 2,600 tallied, and that count will continue today. Meantime, Amazon warehouse workers in Alabama voted to reject a union in a tight race yesterday, but the National Labor Relations Board says about a quarter of the votes are challenged and will need to be reviewed. Those could potentially change the outcome. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. That's the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by Interactive Brokers. And futures are higher this morning. S&P futures up 22 points. And straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. 633 on Wall Street, 55 degrees in Central Park. We got an accident on westbound Grand Central Parkway at the BQE. Details coming up in traffic first. Michael Barr with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Once again, good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. A judge has ordered New York's Democratic-controlled legislature to redraw the state's congressional and legislative districts after finding they were unconstitutional. State Trial Court Judge Patrick McAllister said in a ruling that the maps redrawing the state's congressional districts were gerrymandered to benefit the Democrats. The judge gave lawmakers until April 11th to redo the maps if their new maps fail to pass muster in the courts again. The judge said he would order the state to pay for a court-approved expert to redraw the maps. A federal judge has overturned most of a restrictive Florida voting law, calling it discriminatory. The judge has ruled that sections of the law, including redistricting voting by mail, or restricting voting by mail, and the use of drop boxes were unconstitutional. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
It's an election integrity law. I wouldn't say it's a restriction at all. To have somebody show identification is not a restriction. It's common sense. And some of the other things we did.
Governor DeSantis says the state will appeal. Police in New York City need your help after a shooting in Brooklyn last night that left a 12-year-old boy dead. He was killed while sitting in a parked vehicle with two relatives. Authorities say a 20-year-old woman in the driver's seat was also hit by the gunfire but is expected to survive. Speaking to reporters from the scene, NYPD Assistant Chief Michael Kemper.
Another senseless shooting. This time, the shooting involving the death of a 12-year-old child.
Assistant Chief Kemper was joined by New York Mayor Eric Adams.
We're going to catch this shooter, but as long as we have guns and a revolving door system, we're going to continue to come to crime scenes like this. It's time for it to stop.
Mayor Adams said at least 11 rounds were fired at the scene in East Flatbush. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy has COVID. A spokesperson for the governor says Murphy has tested positive for COVID-19 and will isolate for 5 days. A panel member says former President Donald Trump's son-in-law and White House advisor Jared Kushner provided valuable information during private questioning by the House committee investigating the attack on the Capitol. While declining to specify what he provided, Representative Elaine Luria of Virginia said that Kushner voluntarily spoke to the committee. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. Almost 6:36 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here again is John Stashower.
Thanks, Nathan. It was an elbow injury that prevented Jacob DeGrom from pitching the second half of last season, but the Mets ace has had virtually every injury. His neck, his back, lat, forearm. Now for a second time, an issue with his shoulder. DeGrom felt tightness while doing some long tossing, so he won't pitch as scheduled today. Instead, he'll have an MRI. The hope still is to have DeGrom pitch opening day next Thursday in Washington. The Milwaukee Bucks last spring won a Game 7 in Brooklyn in overtime. The Bucks last night won in Brooklyn in overtime, 120-119. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 44 points. His three-pointer forced the OT. He moved past Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He became the Bucks' all-time leading scorer. The Nets are now in a three-way tie for the 8th, 9th, and 10th spots in the East. Xavier, who just fired its coach, hired a new one for next year. Meanwhile, won the NIT, a one-point win over Texas A&M at the Garden. The Final Four tomorrow in New Orleans starts with Kansas and Villanova, and then it's North Carolina versus arch-rival Duke. Mike Krzyzewski coaches a young Duke squad.
They don't feel pressure. You know, I'm amazed at that. You know, try to remember being that age. I would have felt pressure and nervous and maybe a little bit afraid. They're not.
Of course, Coach K's career will either end tomorrow, or if not tomorrow, then definitely Monday. Bobby Wagner, the veteran linebacker released by Seattle, staying in the NFC West, signed with the Super Bowl champion L.A. Rams. 5 years, $50 million. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Okay, John, thanks. 6:37 on Wall Street. Time to take a look at stocks. Some of the names moving in the pre-market as we get ready to open up the second quarter of 2022. Bloomberg's Laura Wright is with us this morning, watching one of those meme stocks moving big time on stock split news.
Not just any meme stock, Nathan. The poster child for meme stocks. GameStop rallying 15% in the pre-market. They plan to ask their shareholders for a stock split in the form of a dividend. And GameStop is the latest firm to approve a stock split. We've heard from Tesla, Amazon, Alphabet, and this move is really in vogue with retail investors, as typically it reduces the price of a company, and they specifically want to increase the number of Class A shares to 1 billion from 300 million.
And we had some pretty interesting news across the Bloomberg terminal this morning that sparked a rally for Chinese companies that are listed on Wall Street.
Yes, the Bloomberg scoop that Chinese authorities are apparently willing to give U.S. regulators access to auditing reports. As a result, we're seeing Alibaba rallying 7% before the bell and Baidu up 8%, those Chinese-listed ADRs. And there's been a broader nervousness in the market that Chinese tech names would be removed from U.S. exchanges. Last night, the Nasdaq Golden Dragon China Index closed down almost 5.5% overnight, my time, I should say. And in fact, that index posted its worst quarter since 2008. So those Chinese tech names have been really under pressure, but this headline should provide some upside.
Let's go back to Tesla. You mentioned them in terms of the stock split news, but there's been some struggle for Tesla, particularly with the lockdown happening in Shanghai.
Yeah, Reuters reporting that Tesla they will close their Shanghai gigafactory for another day. That factory caught up in rolling lockdowns in China as Beijing sticks to its zero COVID policy. And that really underscores we're starting to see an economic contraction in China as a result. Just this morning, the China Kaijing manufacturing PMI slipping into contraction. So that's a worry for international firms based there.
And finally, Laura, we have an analyst downgrade for a major PC maker in this country.
Yes, Dell selling off 0.8% in the pre-market, a downgrade from Goldman and Morgan Stanley. And really, this raises the question, is the market for personal computer devices saturated? Many consumers upgraded their technological devices over the pandemic. We're starting to see demand normalize at a time when supply chain congestion is tightening because of things like the war in Ukraine, inflation.
Yeah, so Dell falling in the pre-market after a 7.5% drop yesterday for the PC maker. Bloomberg's Laura Wright, thanks for keeping us up to speed on the pre-market all week long. Really appreciate it. As we take a look at stocks as a whole, ahead of this Friday morning open, futures are higher. S&P futures up 21 points. Dow futures up 159 and NASDAQ futures on the rise by 79 points. The 10-year Treasury right now down 15.30 seconds with a yield 2.39%, yield on the 2-year. 2.37%, a spread of 1.5 basis points. And NYMEX crude is down 0.2%, now at $100.07 a barrel. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 1130 weather. Showers giving way to partial sunshine today with a high near 60 degrees. Mid-50s, partly to mostly sunny tomorrow. More clouds than sun Sunday. Chance for a few showers with highs in the low 50s. Currently 54 degrees.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and futures rising this morning. Let's go to the first word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning.
And good morning, Karen. That's right. U.S. futures are in the green after yesterday's sell-off, with Dow futures currently up 156 points. S&P's gained 21. NASDAQ futures rise by 77. The U.S. 10-year yield at 2.4%. Gold is down 5. Oil is little changed, but Bitcoin is down by 4.5%. European markets are also in the green, led by gains in Italy and Spain. And back in the U.S. on the economic front at 8:30, the March jobs report at 9:45, manufacturing PMI, and at 10 o'clock, construction spending and ISM manufacturing. After the bell last night, GameStop planned to split its stock. Shares are up 15% pre-market. In other news, BlackRock is cutting fees on ETFs. And in deal news, Toshiba climbed after its largest shareholder spurred speculation of a takeover bid by Bain Capital. Wrapping things up, Dell was cut to neutral at Goldman Sachs. Comerica raised overweight over at J.P. Morgan. Live from the First Rebecca News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, Bill, thank you. And to hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael?
Karen, thank you very much. Talks between Ukraine and Russia will resume today via video link following meetings earlier this week in Turkey. Meanwhile, Russia also said that two Ukrainian military helicopters made a rare strike across the border, hitting an oil tank facility in the city of Belgorod. There was no immediate confirmation from Kyiv. President Joe Biden said Russian leader Vladimir Putin may have fired some of his advisors or put them under house arrest. Biden says it's an open question as to whether Putin is fully informed on his military's performance in Ukraine. In the NBA, the Nets lost. In the NHL, the Bruins down the Devils 8-1. The Islanders won. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Karen.
All right, Michael, thank you. 6:49 on Wall Street. We turn to news now in science and technology with a Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. It is brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology. NJIT makes industry-ready engineers in more than 20 fields. If it's engineering, it's at NJIT. Learn more at njit.edu. And now here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. The House has moved forward a key piece of President Biden's drug pricing agenda. Lawmakers voted to limit what insured Americans pay for insulin to $35 a month. Now it's up to the Senate, where a bipartisan group is coming up with its own insulin proposal. Shanghai has started part two of its phased lockdown, confining some 16 million people living in the western half of the city to their homes after ending a four-day lockdown in the east. Residents in the western part of the Chinese financial hub, where about two-thirds of Shanghai's population lives, were confined to their homes this morning. And scientists say they have finally assembled the full genetic blueprint for human life, adding the missing pieces to a puzzle nearly completed two decades ago. In research published in the journal Science, an international team described the first-ever sequencing of a complete human genome, the set of instructions to build and sustain a human being. Scientists say this full picture of the genome will give humanity a greater understanding of our evolution and biology, while also opening the door to medical discoveries in areas like aging, neurodegenerative conditions, cancer, and heart disease. And that's a Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. Nathan.
Groundbreaking stuff. All right, Karen, thank you for that. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios, where we're coming up to 6:51 on Wall Street. Time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include President Biden embracing oil as war crowds out his climate agenda. The president saying Vladimir Putin may have some advisors under house arrest. And the January 6th committee reporting valuable information obtained from testimony behind closed doors by Jared Kushner. Let's get more on all these stories now. Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins is back with us from our 99.1 studios in Washington. So we got the announcement, Emily, yesterday that the president is doing this long, slow dip into the strategic reserve and now calling for even more drilling to deal with rising gas prices and supply shortages. I guess what a difference a war makes.
I know. I mean, it's a war, and it's also the fact that Americans are experiencing these very high gas prices. And even though, you know, it's not like Biden has complete control over gas prices, but it is something that he is going to be judged on, and it's something his party is going to be judged on this November. And so this, you heard experts really call this release, say that, you know, it's unprecedented, that it's a huge amount. I mean, compare it to what was released last year. This is way beyond that. And the hope is that this does something to bring gas prices down, or at least shows the American people that Biden is trying to address gas prices. Right now, you know, Americans really do blame Biden. He's tried to peg this on Putin. He's called it the Putin price hike. They've tried to blame big oil. We're going to see a number of oil companies in front of Congress next week. But at the end of the day, a majority of Americans have blamed Biden for higher gas prices, according to a recent Quintipiac poll. And that blame is very likely to come out this November unless Biden is able to shift course.
Yeah, so obviously there are these short to even medium term political and economic considerations for the president. But what does this mean for his overall climate agenda? I mean, this is something that he had campaigned on, to do a major shift from fossil fuels to more renewable energy.
Absolutely. And this does go sort of back against what Biden initially said. And he has angered some in the climate world who said that Biden should really be using this opportunity not to pivot back to gas and oil, but to really pivot to some of these newer technologies, more renewable energy, and use that to get Americans energy independence. I mean, look, Nathan, when you're on the campaign trail, it's hard to predict what's going to happen when you're actually in office. And this is something that certainly forced Biden's hand into changing course. I think it was something initially that the administration was resisting, but gas prices have been so high for so long, and I think the pressure was so great that we are finally seeing the administration shift towards really encouraging this more drilling, releasing more oil, and really just trying to get the price at the gas station to come down.
And in the meantime, Emily, we're hearing even more candor from President Biden on just how much pressure he sees on Russian President Vladimir Putin as this war goes on.
Yes, Biden said yesterday that there's some intelligence, and he kind of hedged it, saying that, you know, they didn't have a ton of evidence yet, but that he could be isolating himself from his top advisors, and that might have prevented Putin from really realizing how poorly this war is going for him. I mean, we've heard a lot of different things as far as what's happening with Russian morale, where the Russian people are at, where Russian soldiers are at. I think it's kind of, you know, good to, you know, make sure that you're verifying this information, that we are getting the backup and the evidence that we need here. But certainly at this point, it doesn't seem like there's any
let up. We, you know, initially heard earlier this week that there was the talks between Ukraine and Russia, and that Russia was going to sort of ease up a bit off the capital. We have seen them ease back off Kyiv, but we've also seen them retarget their forces in the eastern region of Donbas. So it seems like this attack is very much continuing to happen. And it's simply that Russia has changed tactics about where their troops are, not necessarily backed off overall in any meaningful way.
Yeah, so it is going to be interesting to see whether Russia really is on the back foot here or whether we are seeing sort of this regrouping on the Russian side. If it does turn out that Ukraine is getting an upper hand here, what does that mean for the push for even more aid coming from the U.S. to Ukraine?
I think we also have to consider that as far as aid goes to Ukraine, even if the need for military aid is diminished, which I certainly don't think anyone's saying that at this point, there's a huge need for humanitarian aid, for refugees, for these cities that have been absolutely destroyed. There's still a big sense that Ukraine is going to need assistance. And we're keeping an eye on President Biden's discussion about potentially needing a half billion in more aid for there. We haven't seen that request come to Congress yet for additional funding, but Congress is certainly working on other pieces of legislation to further sanction Russia and to assist Ukraine.
In our last minute here, Emily, the January 6th committee got to talk to Jared Kushner behind closed doors yesterday. Have we gotten any idea of what Kushner had to say?
Well, the committee doesn't like to, you know, go open into the public and detail of all these things. There's a reason that when they do these discussions with witnesses that they are off the record and not open to press. But it sounds like he was helpful, that he was helpful in terms of verifying things that they'd been told from others, of kind of making sense of some of the reporting involved around this. And he's also helpful simply because he's one of the highest ranking members in the Trump White House to have gone and spoken with the committee. The committee's tried to speak to other individuals, Steve Bannon, Mark Meadows, but a lot of them have resisted, gone to court, claimed executive privilege. So for them to actually be able to talk to someone like Jared Kushner, who was at that very high level in the president's inner circle, is certainly something I think that's going to make a difference for this committee's investigation.
Yeah, member of the family. Doesn't get much higher than that. Emily Wilkins of Bloomberg Government, as always, thanks for keeping us on top of what's happening in Washington. Read more about all these stories on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal. Listen to Bloomberg Radio in the nation's capital, Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. S&P futures up 20 points now. Dow futures up 158. NASDAQ futures are higher by 72 points. The 10-year Treasury down 17 30 seconds with a yield 2.40%. Yield on the two-year 2.37. And taking a look at oil, little changed. It's been fluctuating between gains and losses in the session with NYMEX crude right now. Now down 0.2% at $100.15 a barrel. For Karen Moscow, I'm Nathan Hager. This is Bloomberg.